Barbara Stimler, Reel 4. Yes, this must have been a terrible time, was it?
Yes. Anyway, nobody was alive. I went back to Vinnytsia, and I was carrying on with my work. Before Ignaz came, when I was still working in the town hall, she was out, Irma, and I was working. And we come back to the flat, everything is gone. Oh, the Russians took everything away from us and they left us alone. Все ушло means everything is gone. And that's it. So we found ourselves another smaller place. And that's when Ignaz came. They looked after me. They knew that I have family in England. I was going out with a fellow. He was very serious with me, but they said to me, Irma and Ignacio, you don't even know what life is about. Why don't you go to England? You've got family there. They will send you to school and educate yourself more and all this. And I listened to them, of course. As I was working in the town hall, one day two reporters came. I'm sorry if I'm not looking at you because I'm concentrating. It's becoming very difficult for me. So I have to...
Oh, but I understand perfectly, Barbara.
I said to them, one was an English reporter, and he spoke German because my English, I'm very poor. I remember when my mother was writing letters, so she pulled down Krakowski, which was my uncle's surname, and my grandparents, and Spellman, which was my auntie's surname. And I put down NW10, W11, and W10, but I did not know which one belongs to which. He put me here in the telegraph. But then some American came. We had all the town people coming in the town hall, talking to us and reporters, and one man came from America, a soldier came, and I wrote a letter, and I done the same thing. I put all the names and W's on the letter, and my aunt got the letter as well. And then I was in the newspaper, so people start phoning to her, but she already knew that I was alive, I was here, and they sent me a year later, in August, I came to England, the beginning of August, I don't remember when the 3rd or the 5th of August, to my family. My uncle had to guarantee for me, because I was under 21, that he give me living accommodations. He had to show how much money he's got in the bank and everything. But they lived in a beautiful house in Lewiston, this 5-bedroom house, so they had plenty of room. My cousins were very nice. I am not going to go into it because I'm not going to talk about my family, but I was not very happy there.
You weren't very happy.
And I was. I moved to my grandmother. My grandmother was 94 at that time. It was also very difficult. She had a house. She was living on the first floor. Ground floor and the basement was let. That was her living. And my uncle from Paris was living on the second floor. When I was unhappy and I found him, and I said to him that I've got to find myself a place to live somewhere. So he told me that either I have to leave here or I'm going to live with them, because my English was not so good and all this, it's too dangerous for me to live in strange places. But I forgot to mention to you, before I came, though I was not permitted to work, a girl I met on the boat coming to England, her family was living in the East End. She found herself a job, she found for me a job. So I was working illegally, was only earning 30 shillings a week, which paid my fares and bits and pieces.
What sort of job were you doing?
I went into a factory sewing. Because every woman can hold a needle. If they would send me to school to perfect my English and do something, but they didn't. So.
Did you find that when you came to England, there was an understanding of what you had been through, or there was a desire to live?
I wasn't realized. No, nobody realized.
Did they ask you about it?
No. They didn't ask me, and I was not thinking about it. Maybe they were afraid that I get hurt by asking. My cousins were very good to me. They didn't do me any harm. Don't forget, I must tell you, they didn't do me any harm. It's only that I was not happy there. I was a little bit disappointed. Maybe my aunt was a colder person. I needed some warmth. I don't know. But anyways, I lived with my grandmother. And Irma and Ignace knew what I was going through because he wrote to me I should send for Irma a coat. And I wrote to them that I hadn't got myself a coat because before I came to England, I sold everything what I had to be able, I had to go to the council twice in Katowice. I had to go to the foreign office in Warsaw and needed money. And I wouldn't ask my boyfriend for it, knowing that I'm leaving him. And Ignaz had also so much. They'd not enough, they kept me. So I was doing this, thinking when I come to England, I have everything anyway. To cut the story short, my uncle upstairs, he somehow done it for me, a coat, a winter coat. And then when I was working factory, so the governor was very nice to me. He always took what I got for lunch, and the other girls are had English, two Jewish women and two English women. And they were so good to me. I've got a little trinket. What Beatty gave me, the English girl gave me, and she said to me, it should bring you so much luck as it brought me. And she was an invalid. One leg was shorter than the other, an elderly lady. Do you know, she gave me this for my birthday, and Easter time I got engaged. My papers came through to go back to Germany on Friday, but my husband proposed to me on Thursday, day before. He saw me three times, so he proposed. He was also in a terrible situation because he ran to Russia. When Hitler came to Poland. He ran to Russia, then he got very ill, he had typhoid, and only one solution for him was to join the army. And in that time, when he was just the Polish army, Anders' army, twice he went as a Jew, they didn't take him in. So the third time he changed his name. It was just maybe, because there were also a lot of Jewish men in the army as Jews, but he was just unlucky that somebody was there who was anti-Semitic. He didn't take him in. Then he changed his name for Edward Stiller, and he said that he's a Pole, Roman Catholic. I even have his praying book, because I thought maybe that kept him alive. I wouldn't, you know, to me, a religion is a religion. People believe in it. I'm not the one to condemn it. Anyway, and they took him to the army. And he all the time was as a Pole. Can you imagine how difficult it was when sometimes you hear when they talk about Jews and you have to. When he came to England, he was living with a Polish fellow still under shared his room because either they had to have a job or go back to Poland. So not like these immigrants are coming in now and the government is keeping them. Anyway, so he found himself a job in factory. His father was a tailor at home and he had an idea. And when he was in the army in Italy, because he was also in Monte Cassino fighting, so when he was in the army, he bought some books, pattern books and all this, and he was studying bits and pieces in the army for the officers and all this, and he was earning money that way. So when When I working in this factory, I was working, there are two Jewish women and two English, I told you. They were all very good to me. And one of the Jewish women was married to a Polish man who was also in the army. And they started inviting me for supper and all this. And they knew the situation I was living in. And they knew somebody who was also living in the East End there. And this man was standing, waiting for some papers in the phone office. And my husband was standing there as well. And from word to word, he found out that my husband is Jewish and he invited him for supper there. And these people I was working with, they met him there. And when he came, he says, you know, I met a very nice fellow from Krakow. I would like you to meet him. So Easter was coming along, and we were not working. So I went there on Sunday. We were invited. And we met each other on Monday. And he took me home on that Sunday, and we meet on Monday again. And we're supposed to go to Faye, the one I was working together on that Sunday again, and he turned up himself. I told him I've got family in Birmingham, my cousins in Birmingham, and they invited me for the weekend. So Faye did not believe, she did not know that I had cousins in Birmingham. When I come back to all, they made me write a letter to him, to meet him in Hyde Park Corner, that and that time. He posted in the letter, he didn't want to trust me. And that time Len proposed to me. And I thought to myself, where am I going back to Germany fight? And you see, why I was going back to Germany, because these people, Irma Ignaz, were waiting for papers to go to Africa. He had his sister in Africa. And he said to me, well, they will eat, I will eat. But then I thought to myself, what am I going to go through this again? I'd rather stay here and meet Mary Lynn and all this. And that's how it was. Now I've got two sons, and my older son, Harvey, unfortunately, he got MS. And my younger son suffers with nerves. Now for terrible problems. This is the best business you can kill me. I can't get out of my system. He's married, he's got two children, I'll show you in a minute. And it's a struggle.
Yes, do you think their problems are related to the Holocaust?
I don't think MS would be related to them. That's Stuart's death. Stuart's death is related. I don't think, because people suffer so much with MS here. But what made me think that, you see, I suffer with nerves badly. But I see a psychoanalyst every week. As soon as I feel that I'm bad, I'm shouting and carrying on, so I straight away run to get help. My son can't see that he's well, not well. He can't see it.
With your psychoanalysis, how largely has the Holocaust figured? You know, how important is that to your life?
It is very. Because that killed me with my nerves. How can I think clearly what happened to my father and to my mother and other people besides my parents, what they suffered? When I see on television, when they show something through the Holocaust, when they took, let's say, Bergen-Belsen or other camps, and the sacks of bodies lying there. And we, even when the Americans or the English came, why didn't they take the bodies, put them in the wagons, and put them in the graves? They made the Germans dragging by the hair or by the hand or by the leg these poor bodies. And you think, isn't my mother there? Or anybody whom I knew? It's a killer. It's absolutely incredible. Is that still going on?
Do you want, you know, I was wondering, it must cost you an awful lot, Barbara, to actually talk about this.
The same as I'm talking to you. No, I never tell them. about what happened to me after the war. I don't. I just say that I've got two sons. I'm very happy. My husband's also Polish. Wasn't English, Polish, I'm not the British command. But then I finish with my children and I break down again. Oh, I was going through quite a lot. It's a matter of fact that even the psychoanalyst said to me I shouldn't speak more than one session. But later I spoke two sessions within Horsham. You see, it's not many people who are, want to do it. This is the problem.
Do you find it? You see,
I know I get myself in a state, but what can I do? Mm.
Do the children understand, do you think? Do you feel you get through?
You see, my youngest son, I can't talk much about it, and my youngest son always tells me how bad he is all the time. He lives now in Northampton. Whenever I speak to him, he tells me about his problems, that he, his eyes hurting, and this hurting, and that hurting. It is a big deal for me to phone him. They lead a very, he's married, they have no children, thank God. They are leading a very sheltered life. They don't have many friends. I don't know even they've got any friends. They left London. He's got to talk to someone. He doesn't realize what's doing to me. But what can I do? I have to listen to him. It's very, very tough. He's very thin. He's like a skeleton. He is, but his nerves are eating him up. And it's very, very difficult for me. Because I tried really hard. When I had the money from Germany, we didn't buy the, I didn't run for holidays, bought myself a diamond ring and bought myself a fur coat. We sold even a car to invest it wisely for the future. And my children, I thank God, were brought up in a very good home. I never talked about my war experience. It's true. I was feeding them with nerves. I was bringing them up with nerves. Let's say if it, they were sitting and eating in the high chair, so I would put a spoon and do something. Put a spoon and do something. I couldn't sit down calmly. Oh, because I've got to do this, I've got to do that. You see what I mean? Even now, I've got terrible arthritis. My legs, hands are killing me, but I have to sit and knit. I will undo it, and I will knit again, because I just cannot sit in one place. What do you do? I don't want to take any tranquilizers. I took for many, many years. But what's good of it? I'm sitting and rocking myself on a chair. I'm sleeping. That is not a life for me. I like to play bridge, which I do, which relaxes me when I play bridge. And we lead quite a nice life. We've got many friends. And we're being invited all the time, and I make evenings. I can't live by myself. I have to have friends.
Do you go to the Holocaust Centre at all?
Oh, very much.
Yes. How important is that to you, do you think?
Very important. Excuse me. Very important. Not only to me, but for women who are on their own. It's their second home. God forbid, if I would have a husband, I would be living there as well. But thank God I've got a husband and I've got to look after him. I just can't go anytime I want. But I make myself go on Monday. I also like to do whatever I can there. Let's say we sit near the door when the people come to take money or prepare tea or something like that. Every Monday I go there and have lunch there. I prepare for my husband lunch before I go out. And I have a game of cards. And I try to be there wherever I can. But I think it also... This Holocaust and they brought up more, though we don't talk about it in the center about our life experience. I actually don't want to know anybody's life experience. If somebody starts talking, I do listen, because I think maybe that person needs to talk. I try to be understanding, though my inside is going round. You know, when I had a nervous breakdown, it was when Stuart was about 8 to 9 months old. And that's what I think Stuart suffers with nerves. That's what I blame myself. I felt very bad inside me. My mind was there, but I would like to cut myself open and take something out of me. What? I don't know. Something probably what was there to talk about. Now, my husband took me to a psychiatrist. He had a nursing home in King's Langley, a private nursing home. Now, he put Stuart in a council nursing home, and he put me in a private nursing home. He couldn't do both, because we're not so... we had a business, our own business. We had a little house, a three-little-bedroom house in Leesden. And I had Harvey, was about 7 years, now going to six and something, because it's 6 years different between the two boys. And Stuart was about 9 months, 10 months old. I can't remember. I would have to ask my husband. And I had this problem. No. He said I have to go into the nursing home to be treated. The psychiatrist, Dr. Gierer. I went there. The next day, they gave me a truth injection. And I started taking it. But I didn't. I only remember, I did talk about my childhood. I started, it's 1939. And what I said, I couldn't tell you. I only woke up the next day with the most terrible, terrible headache. Like somebody put a very heavy thing on my head. Terribly headache. And then the two women comes to clean, and I sit down and I get out of here, you German bastards. And I don't even know till today if they were German. They were very active women. And that's how they looked. Especially when I was in the working camp, there were not many. I told you it was one assessment and gendarmes, but there were so many of these hefty women which they could beat us to pieces. It was, and in Auschwitz the same. It was, so I saw these two hefty women, and I chucked them out, and I don't even know today who they were. I was there, I was supposed to be there for 3 months, but after about 5 weeks, my husband brought me Stuart, the baby, and he didn't want to come to me. He didn't recognize me, and he was already walking. And I thought, what am I doing to that family? I bet my husband's getting broken financially, because I'm here, it cost him a fortune. My child doesn't recognize me, what am I doing? So when Dr. Bira came the next day, I said to him, he says, look, my sister, we have to do for you what you think is right for you. But one thing I tell you, you're not fit to look after your children. You have to have somebody to be there. So when my husband came, he came every night practically. And before he came to me, he went to see Stuart, speak to the nurse, to see how Stuart was. And I said to him, I know I'm ruining my husband probably financially as well, and the child does not recognize me. So when Len came the next day, I told him the story, and he says, don't worry, I get in touch with some agents, and we get somebody, can be helped. So he has a letter from an Italian girl that she's coming on this, I remember it was 19th, but I don't know which month. And I got back home. He brought me home. Stuart is still in the nursery. I thought to the nursery, can I come and see Stuart? So that time I didn't drive. I took the bus and I went there. They kept Stuart behind while the nurse took the other children. They mostly were orphans, you know, for broken homes. she took to the park, and Stuart was left behind. Now, where did he came? I took him. He didn't fight with me. I took him by the hand. We went for a walk. I bought him an ice cream and all this, and I brought him back to the nursery there. As soon as the nurse came, he just left me and onto the nurse. Pushed everybody away and onto the nurse. She was very good to him, you see. She was really feeling sorry. Because such a circumstance is not that the home is broken up, anyway. And then the girl was supposed to come. The day before, we have a letter. She can't come because her mother is ill. Oh my God, I sit there crying. It was 8 o'clock when the letters came. I put my dressing gown on. I sat on the stairs for a whole hour till the offices were open and started phoning to all the, I don't remember how they call themselves, people who were arranging for people coming from abroad.
Well, sort of agencies of it, yes. Mm.
And I got hold of one in Finchley, and she said, I've got a girl sitting here. The family went away on holidays, and they didn't give her, they didn't leave her money or food. I said, look, do me a favor. I told her the situation. I was crying. To every one of them, I was crying. Will you please keep them as she is? I don't care how she is, what she is, I want her. Italian girl. She was from Naples somewhere, you know, from a village, very, very, like, she looked like a gypsy. I didn't care. I took her, brought her home. We made lunch. I gave her something to repair, because I was supposed to be a certain time to collect Stuart. And we went in the afternoon, we collect Stuart, we brought him home. And I had her for about 6 weeks, because then she wanted more money, we couldn't afford, and I was already starting to feel better. I had been on tranquilizers and all this, and au pair would be enough for me. So my husband got in touch with the we told Lena to find herself another job. We didn't chuck her out. Until she found herself another job, we got an au pair, and that was already not so expensive, and it was a big help to me. And if you wanted sometimes to go out in the evening, we could go out because we had the girl. And that's what I think that's what made me went up. When I had the first money from Germany, we invested it very wisely. Even my husband sold the car, he was going on buses to the business. And we went for the first holidays to Italy by car. So he couldn't get out from the car at all. The child was screaming. Whenever my husband went out, the child was screaming. He was afraid he's going to be left. And then when he starts going to school, mommy will not forget me to collect me. And that's why I know that it affected him.
Has he ever talked to you about it? Should he have asked you about your war experience?
No, he knows now. Because when I had made the tape for Spielberg, I had it copies. I gave one to Harvey and one to Stuart. Stuart phones me up. He says, Mom, you tell me that you never taught Harvey and that what you went through. I said, no, Stuart, I never. And so he knows. Actually, he's the one who looked at the whole tape. I don't think my older son looks at the whole tape. Now, my granddaughter, she wants to look through the whole thing, because I'm speaking in her school on the 1st of July. And I told her, look at the tape, because you break down when I'm speaking. You better see what's happened to your grandmother. She said, I'm going to look through my grandma. So, they all have the tapes, because I had copies. The man who done the, he done it very cheap for me, £7.50 he charged for me. So, and one copy is in my friend Sammy's cottage, and one copy somebody else got it, and people are already asking me, they want to still see it. If you want, eventually, you want the copy, I can give it to you.
Well, that's very kind, Barbara. I'll ask the museum. I'm not certain what the situation is there.
And you could hear of Bas Shalom. Though they've got a copy as well, they ask. So I gave them the copy. I don't know if they need it, if they looked at it already. I'm going there on Monday with the Jewish Polish Ex-Servicemen Association. They gave them some money to open a library. And they're making it a opening the library on Monday, so I'm going with them.
Do you see yourself ever coming to terms with your Holocaust experience?